Avi Lipkin with us. He is his most recent book presents this fracture between Sunni and Shia Islam that is the basis of the civil war right now in both Syria and Iraq and Yemen, and also issues throughout the Islamic world that are repercussions of all of this. But Avi, you know, it's really interesting that the since America has declared war on it, the Islamic State has become the largest and most successful Islamic terrorist group in all of history.
Absolutely correct. And you have to remember, the Turks are helping them, Saudis are helping them,
right.
The Egyptians are helping them, and they have an unending flow of
right.
volunteers
correct.
From all over the world
correct.
Coming to join their ranks.
Of course. In fact, the more we bomb, the more that we kill, the more that more members they have.
Yeah, and don't forget that the Sunnis are 85% of the Muslim world.
Correct.
The Shiites are only 15%.
Right.
And, you know, the Germans in World War II were the best soldiers. But for every German who fell, you know, 10 Russians fell. Guess what? Tomorrow, no more Germans. And that's what's happening with the Shiites. The Shiites eventually are going to lose.
Yeah, of course they're going to lose because they're outmanned 4-5-1 and they're outgunned with American weapons 25-1. But this most recent peace accord, America's capitulation to Iran, is going to give Iran more life because it will enable Iran to buy weapon systems from all countries around the world, and it gives them the money to deploy more conventional weapons against the Islamic State. And so it's giving them more life, and it will ultimately end up with them having the money to build their bomb. And when they have their bomb, it's very difficult for Sunni Islam to prevail against them. But that is the future. And it's interesting, you mentioned Turkey. You know, and the problems we have right now is that the Kurds are the only source of targeting information that we have on our airstrikes against the Islamic State. And yet the Turks are bombing the Kurds. Of course, also in this war, the Islamic State is deploying almost universally American weapons, and the weapons being deployed against them are almost exclusively American weapons. We become the merchant of death.
Yes, and again, you know, the Shiites say that America created ISIS, and the Sunnis say that America is backing Iran.
And we are.
In the end, America is hated by everyone in
correct.
The Islamic world.
Correct. Oh, yeah. I mean, the only sane advice you could give America relative to the Islamic world is to withdraw and quarantine, to do no business with any Islamic country, to stop all oil purchases, to stop all arms shipments, to completely disengage from the world of Islam is the only sane approach. Now, you mentioned the fall of Damascus. I'm sure you're aware that the prophet Isaiah, actual name Yashaya, that he in the 17th chapter speaks of the final collapse of Damascus. It becomes a heap of ruins and of the fall of the Syrian government. So this is something that Yahweh, who has a pretty good track record of predicting the future, committed to paper 2,700, or actually to parchment, but 2,700 years ago. He predicted what we're witnessing.
Yes, my interpretation when I speak in churches, and let me tell you, it's a real trip because I'm a Jew, I'm not a Christian, right. but I speak in Christian churches, and the Christians want to know what the scripture is saying, and they say, but it says Damascus will be destroyed in a day. And my answer to that is, who knows how much is a day in God's accounting? In other words, the Arab Spring has been going on for over 4 years. Maybe 5 years, Damascus could be destroyed, or even 10 years. I don't think it's going to take 10. I think it's going to take a lot less. But God's day could be 5 years.
Actually, I'm not sure he says a day. It's more in that day. And the realization here is that if you put Isaiah 17 in context, what it's speaking about is the ultimate fall of Damascus, it becoming a twisted ruin, and that it's that Syria falls with it, the government of whatever influence they previously had. But what's really troubling about all that, because that's obvious, that is going to happen. It cannot be stopped at this point. No amount of an American or world intervention is going to stop the fall of Damascus. But what's interesting is that the next comment is thinning Israel at the waist. is that Israel is going to become the Neville Chamberlain sacrificial lamb, and that the call will be for Israel to give up the West Bank just like it gave up Gaza, and the prediction is that Israel is thinned at the waist, which means that the world will compel Israel to give up the West Bank for the express purpose of appeasing these Muslims who, once Damascus falls, will be on the precipice of invading Israel, which is their ultimate goal.
Yes, well, indeed, you know, we gave Gaza away.
Correct.
And it did not bring peace. It brought missiles and...
Oh,
actually, yesterday,
right.
I'm sure you've heard of the most recent reports of this Palestinian terrorist who was under investigation by the Israeli Secret Service, and he provided very vital information about the new tunnels that have been dug under the border into Israel over the last year. So Israel knows that we are about to be attacked again by Gaza with their missiles, with their terrorists coming in through tunnels. And if we, God forbid, give up the so-called West Bank, Judea and Samaria, it, again, it will be giving more land for more missiles and more terrorist attacks and more tunnels into Israel to attack us.
And, and it is, but by the way, it's going to happen. I mean, Yahweh and predicts it through the prophet Yeshayah, Isaiah, and he says it's going to happen. It is a horrible choice, but Israel's going to be isolated. I am convinced that just as Obama and Kerry, prior to the Iranian nuclear capitulation, we're out telling the world that Israel must give up the West Bank, and that if it does not, it will risk isolation from the entire world. And Kerry went around Europe to get the world in lockstep to abandon Israel, to boycott Israel, if they did not surrender the West Bank to these mythical people who parade around as so-called Palestinians. And I'm convinced that the reason that the Obamanator got Iran to agree to the nuclear deal, which has, by the way, is total capitulation by the United States, was the backroom chatter was, once this deal is signed, we will implement what we promised to do regarding Israel. We will make them easy prey.
You know, I have to tell you and your listeners, there's a pastor in North Florida. My name is Carl Gallups. He might have been on your show. He goes under the name P.P. Simmons, and he did a YouTube about me and my wife in 2010 that, you know, my wife picked up a broadcast on the Egyptian TV. That's her work. She watches the Egyptian TV and monitors the radio and TV broadcasts of the entire Arab world. And there was there, people should go to Saudi Plant, B-L-A-N-T.
By the way, Egyptian, the Egyptians are, can I just quick question you there? Just stop for just 1 second for clarification. Egyptians are not Arabs. And, Arab has been used, as a way of creating this myth that an attack on Islam is racist. The majority of Muslims are not Arabs. There are Arabs who are Muslims, and the majority of Arabs are Muslims, but the majority of Muslims are not Arabs. And so she's monitoring Islamic news sources.
The only reason I say Arabic is because the language in Egypt is Arabic. So,
yeah, of course.
Anyway, the TV announcement was that the former Egyptian foreign minister was debating with Muslim Brotherhood representatives, saying to them that Obama had sworn to him in January 2009 that President Obama was a Muslim, that his father was a Muslim, his stepfather was a Muslim. He was raised in a mosque and in a mosque since the late 11 as a Muslim. He is a Muslim.
Correct.
And that he swore to the Arab world he would destroy Israel. So this if you go to Saudi Plant, there was almost 5 million hits there. And this is something my wife picked up. The Prime Minister's office here in Jerusalem knows about it. Obama's plan is to destroy Israel. Forcing Israel to withdraw to the borders of 1967 will lead to Israel's destruction. Therefore, we prefer isolation to destruction.
Yeah, I think that actually that Obama is a blend of anti-Semitic Christianity, and, you know, Paul, the founder of the Christian religion, author of half of its New Testament, was extraordinarily anti-Semitic and anti-Torah. So he is an anti-Semitic Christian. He is also an anti-Semitic Muslim, and he is also a socialist secular humanist. I think he is a blend of those doctrines into a universal hate system for Israel. And there is no question that that this president wants to do everything in his power to see Israel become so vulnerable that it is ultimately destroyed. The only problem that Obama has is that
broadcast that he has three tasks. Obama has three tasks. Mm-hmm. One is to destroy the regime in Tehran, which he will do by giving them more money and more rope to hang themselves. Secondly, destroy Israel. Thirdly, turn America into a Muslim country by bringing tens of millions of Muslims into the U.S. So, with your permission, we have to agree to disagree.
He's
a communist Muslim. Communism and Islam hate Christian America, and that's where I think he is.
Yeah, I think he is a combination of all three of those religions. But the fact is that he can put the pieces in place that make Israel more vulnerable to Islam. And he is doing that. He's doing everything he can to make Israel more vulnerable. He cannot prevail because Israel has a friend in very, very high places. And Israel's benefactor has told us exactly what's going to happen to Israel. And he has actually, in the 18th chapter of Isaiah, specifically warned the United States that our meddling has been counterproductive, and it begins with a woe. Now, as it relates to the other two things, there is a 0% chance that America is going to become Islamic. And there is a 0% chance that America is going to bring down the Iranian regime. These things are not going to happen. And there's no chance that America is going to invade Iran. It would be suicide for us to attempt to do any of those things. And I see this president doing everything in his power to aid and benefit Iran. I think he's doing so out of, you know, the only place in the world in this issue where Saudi Arabia and Israel agree that America's moves are benefiting Shia Islam in Iran and that they are counterproductive. So I see him as a benefactor of Iran, not as a as an adversary of Iran.
Well, I agree that on the surface it looks like he's going to benefit Iran, but like I said before, I think the agreement with Iran, should it pass in Congress and overcome the veto, I think that this plan will give the Iranians more cash with which to finance not only terror, but the war against the Islamic State.
Agreed.
And so, you know, Obama wants the Iranians to die for...
Welcome back. We're having a conversation with Avi Mordecai. Avi Lipkin, be the best probably to Google to find your books, Avi Lipkin. Avi, as we're talking about the world as we see it today, I am quite convinced that lifting the sanctions on Iran and freeing Iran to complete its nuclear bomb helped to cause this civil war between Sunni and Shia Islam to last a while longer than it otherwise would, because as you mentioned, they're outgunned 4-5 to 1 and outarmed 25-1. There was only a limited amount of time that they would be able to continue to engage in this fight. But America has enriched them and empowered them and equipped them now. So, you know, we might see this battle go on for another 5 to 10 years.
Well, I don't think it'll go for 5 to 10 years. I think it'll go maybe for another year or two, and then it's going to end. And the reason I'm saying this is because within a few months or sooner, Bashar al-Assad will withdraw from, will withdraw from Damascus. He will have his little island there in northwest Syria. Syria no longer exists except as an Islamic state. The Druze, who are 700,000 on the mountain of the Druze in South Syria, are now surrounded by ISIS. The Druze are begging other Druze from Lebanon, Israel, and Golan to go and fight alongside them to defend them.
Right.
Otherwise, it'll be a Holocaust. 700,000.
Oh, yeah. The Druze will be treated just like the Zoroastrians were, the Yazidis. They'll be treated just the same way. And they know it.
Yeah. In fact, I'll say something else. The Golan Druze who refused to get Israeli citizenship are now flocking to get Israeli citizenship.
Of course, of course.
And the Druze of the Golan and Druze of Israel are in contact with the Druze on Mount Druze, and the Mount Druze people, you know, in South Syria are begging that Israel create a safe zone corridor at Mount Druze. Basically, Israel will extend its border eastward. So, you know, while the president and the world keep saying Israel to withdraw to the 67 borders, Israel's borders will actually grow, because the Druze will now be part of Israel, or the Druze will become part of Jordan. We also have a lot of Druze officers in the Jordanian army. The problem with that is ISIS is going to take Jordan. And so the Druze officers in Jordan are also going to be fleeing.
I don't think there's any question.
Al Jazeera, 82% of the Sunni Muslims support ISIS. In Saudi Arabia, 92% of the Sunni Muslims in Saudi support ISIS. So the king of Jordan, the king of Saudi Arabia, are doomed, and the royal families are doomed.
I want to be careful about Saudi Arabia. We can talk about that in a moment. But there is no question that Jordan is going to fall to the Islamic State. And and it's mainly because the Jordanian king represents a tiny fraction of that population's mindset. He is not respected by anyone outside of Western states, and so he is going to find it impossible to motivate his military to fight effectively against the Islamic State. And the Islamic State is going to get the majority of Jordanians, many of whom masquerade as Palestinians, to join in their cause, because the Islamic State will say Jordan today, Israel tomorrow. And Jordan is absolutely going to fall. Whether or not Bashar al-Assad goes to northwest Syria or not is a question, because northwest Syria is primarily under the control now of the Nusra front. And they're not going to take very kindly to him. So I think he's in a real pickle. I think that his days are numbered. But I do think, Avi, that there's no way this ends in a year. I could see Jordan falling within a year or two. But I don't think that the fight to the death between Sunni and Shia Islam ends in a year. I think this is an ongoing battle that's going to play out in over 5 to 10 years. And it's going to take the lives of what will be hundreds of thousands and then millions.
Very correct. And by the way, we haven't spoken at all about Lebanon. Lebanon is a country which is, you know, 28% Christian. They're also going to be slaughtered. It's 40% Shiite. They're going to be slaughtered, because now the Hezbollah is going to retreat back into Lebanon with Jabhat al-Nusra and al-Qaeda and the Islamic State on their heels. And, you know, the Sunnis do not recognize an independent state of Lebanon. They said Lebanon is part of Sham, you know, Syria.
Right. Yeah,
so
Syria.
The civil war will be protracted, and you're right, into Lebanon, into Jordan. And I received some information a few days ago that even the Bedouin tribes, supposedly loyal to King Abdullah of Jordan, are now being bribed by ISIS. To betray King Abdullah. And the Saudis are happy about that, because there's this traditional 100-year feud going on between the tribe of Saud and the tribe of the Hashemites.
Let's talk when we return after the commercial about the Hezbollah and the Islamic State. Welcome back to Gravity Conversation with Avi Lipkin. If you're interested in his books, you just Google Avi Lipkin, and you will come to all of the books that that he has written. They're all for sale on his site. We're talking now about the most recent book he has written, and this rivalry between Sunni and Shia Islam that runs all the way back to a few years after Muhammad's death. Avi, I think it is highly likely that we are going to see the Islamic State consolidate its positions in the Sunni majority areas in Iraq, consolidate its positions in the Sunni dominated areas of Syria, and that collectively is now the Islamic State. Iraq, as we knew it, no longer exists. Syria no longer exists. You have the Islamic State, you have the city-state of Damascus, and you have Iraq and Iran and Iran West. So where do they go after they do that? And
like I said before the break, Lebanon is going to face a Sunni invasion.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the Latakia enclave of the Bashar al-Assad family will be attacked. I think that, of course, they're going to take Jordan, and I think they're going to take Saudi.
Yeah, let's talk about each of those and what makes sense for them. Because they're a pragmatic group of people. Lebanon is a challenge for them because of Hezbollah. You know, there was a period of time where Assad was losing every battle against the Nusra Front. And when Hezbollah engaged on behalf of Assad, then they turned the tide, and there was a period of a year where Assad was making gains against the fundamentalist Muslim jihadists. And then when the Islamic State emerged, Hezbollah kind of faded into the background and back into to Lebanon. Hezbollah is a tough and bitter enemy. It's a tough militia for the Islamic State. So while they could take Lebanon, the price they would pay would be high. Jordan, on the other hand, I think that the ability to take down Jordan by getting the majority of its population to side with them and turn against the government, I think they could take down Jordan with relative ease.
I say amen to both of them. But a very important point, going back to Hezbollah, mm-hmm. A lot of Hezbollah soldiers are now deserting their positions in Syria and going home. They don't want to know anymore because they also been very bloodied. And like you said, and like I said two breaks ago, they just don't have enough manpower to defeat the masses of volunteers, volunteers coming from all over the world.
Correct. So, or the weaponry, the weaponry of the Islamic State, because it's state-of-the-art American weaponry. I mean, they're using the weapons that they confiscated from the Shia Muslims that America gave to Iraq and effectively gave to Iran. They've confiscated those, so they are extraordinarily well armed, and Hezbollah is playing with Iranian weapons, which are vastly inferior. So the Islamic State will absolutely prevail over Hezbollah, Allah's party, no question about it. But at a cost. I think they would pay a greater cost to invade Lebanon than they would to invade Jordan, and I think Jordan is strategically more advantageous for them and much easier for them to control because it's almost exclusively Sunni Islam.
You know, I have to tell you something. I went to visit some Christian friends from America who are living in the old city of Jerusalem, and they were on a rooftop apartment, and I went to visit them. I looked out over the old city, very impressive, and I saw a lot of black flags. In other words, ISIS has their flags. Yeah. All over East Jerusalem.
Right.
And you have to remember something. Yes. Al Jazeera, in their poll, said that 82% of the Sunni Muslims in the Middle East support ISIS.
Yeah.
And so, for example, when Kerry and Obama said that Israel has to go back to the borders of June 5th, 67, it's never going to happen because when ISIS is flying its flags in the Palestinian areas, and ISIS is now fighting Hamas, and ISIS is now fighting the PLO. You're going to see a massive showdown, and if they take Jordan, which I think they will, ISIS takes Jordan, Israel will not be able to sit on its hands for very long. And the same applies to the Druze in South Lebanon. Israel will have to defend the Druze. Same thing applies to the Druze in South Syria. Israel is going to have to end up defending the Druze. And Israel is going to have to defend the Christians Lebanon.
Now, let's talk about the scenario. Jordan is an easy catch for the Islamic State. Once they have completely surrounded Damascus and Damascus is rendered neutered, they will invade and Jordan and they will prevail. And they may then, with the increase in manpower, invade Lebanon. I think there's a likelihood of that occurring, and I think they will prevail. Now, where they go from there is interesting because they're not going to invade Israel until they know they can prevail, because all other attempts have failed so mightily. So the question is, do they try to finish the job against Shia Islam and invade the Shia portions of Iraq, like Baghdad, and try to take the war to the Shia? Or do they invade Saudi Arabia, try to capture the military hardware of Saudi Arabia so that they can deploy that against the Shias in Iran. And the question really is, the only reason they would invade Saudi Arabia is because they think that they could, that the population at large would turn on the ruling family, and that they could confiscate what is the largest military in the Islamic world and turn it against the Shias.
Very correct. And I will add one more thing. Everybody's hollering about the Iranian atomic bomb. But the Saudis, and this is in my third book, Islamic Threat Update, in 2003, I have an article there that I translated from the Hebrew with permission of the Israel's biggest newspaper, Yediot Ahronot, and it's an article written by Ronen Bergman, who is one of the top espionage correspondents in the Israeli intelligence, correspondents in the Israeli journalistic world. And the article is in my third book, and it's in my newest book, Islamic Rivalry. The Saudis, as of 10 years ago, have a Chinese-built missile base at the Al Salil Oasis. The Chinese sold the Saudis, as of 10 years ago, 120 Dongfeng missiles, which are equivalent to the Persians, Pershing missiles, and the Pakistanis under Abdul Qadir Khan, the father of the nuclear project of Pakistan, paid for by Saudi Arabia, has provided the Saudis with nuclear warheads.
Correct.
So guess who has Chinese missiles and Pakistani nuclear warheads?
Yeah.
And this is something which is a great embarrassment to the U.S. Government over the last 30 years. All the administrations are embarrassed about it. It's been kept under wraps.
Right.
But the Saudis already have 120 nuclear missiles.
Yeah, I don't know the quantity they have, but this I know for certain. The Pakistanis were incapable of financing a nuclear bomb program. It takes a lot of money, and Pakistan is an impoverished Islamic country. And so, but the Pakistanis, because the culture that they were originally educated in was the Hindu and Indian culture, are far more enlightened, far brighter than the average Muslim. And so the Pakistanis were the right place to develop the bomb, so long as you had funding, and OPEC through Saudi Arabia provided the funding with a quid pro quo. The quid pro quo was, we will fund the bomb, but you give us the bomb. And then the reason that the Saudis, after America spent $5 billion building new air bases in Saudi Arabia, kicked Americans out, was because they didn't need the Americans for protection anymore. They were a nuclear power.
Correct.
So that is the reality of nukes in Saudi Arabia. But Saudi Arabia, you know, it's a different situation with a nuke in Saudi Arabia and a nuke in Iran. The Iranians would gladly sacrifice their lives to kill infidels with a bomb. It's, you know, it's the nature of their religion. And while the Saudi leaders are fundamentalist Muslims, their life is so decadent that they would do anything to maintain their life here. And so they're less likely to use their missiles and bombs.
In fact, Khamenei, who is now the leader of Iran, has said that even if half of the Iranian population died as a result of a war, Allah still has a victory. Half the Iranian population is 35 million people. This leadership in Iran is completely crazy. And
yeah,
so, you know, like, I wonder, you know, what are the motivations for Obama and Kerry to let them have this rope to hang themselves, other than Israel attacking them. But I will say something else also, which nobody in the American media is covering, and that is that Iran, with this agreement, is going to unload 60 tankers that are out there anchored out in the ocean, and they're going to dump about 30 million tons of crude oil onto the markets. Saudi agrees to this. Saudi and OPEC are also lowering prices. I think we're going to be seeing $20 a barrel oil.
You know why the price of oil has gone down?
Because they're flooding the market.
Why are they flooding the market?
Because they want to break the backs of the American and Canadian factors.
No. Saudi Arabia, when America invaded Iraq and gave Iraq to Iran, and therefore empowered Saudi Arabia's principal enemy, which is Shiite Islam, that the Saudi Arabians recognized that the Iranians were going to develop the bomb, and that America was giving the Iranians a military via Iraq, which was now Iran West. And so the Saudis realized that they didn't want to go to war against Iran because a war between the two would probably turn out as badly as the war between Iraq and Iran during Saddam Hussein's period. And so they don't want to go to war against them, so they say, all right, Saudi Arabia and the royal family have hundreds of billions of dollars in assets already and holdings around the world. They can afford to take down the price of oil and gas in the world markets and crater them. And if they do that, then Iran's windfall from America's release of their sanctions has far less benefit to Iran than it would otherwise. So the Saudi Arabians are the reason that oil and gas prices have fallen, and they have done it strategically to minimize Iran's benefit from the lifting of sanctions because they realize that Iran is going to use all of that money to buy weapons.
Yes, but also I have a feeling, from my understanding, is that Obama wants to break the backs of the independent oil people in the U.S. and Canada, just like Clinton did in 1998.
Well, you know, yeah, Obama is a communist. All of his rhetoric is communist. He is, in fact, a communist. He hates business. He doesn't understand business. He has no clue what drives economics. And yes, so he is anti all corporations and all business, and so he foolishly would try to legislate the demise of America's largest corporations. That's just who he is. But the fall of oil prices has all to do with Saudi Arabia and Islam. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. This is our final segment for today. We've spent all 2 hours with Avi Lipkin, and who is the author of a number of books, started exposing the threat that is Islam back in 1997, and has written a series of 7 or 8 books, all of which are available on his website. You just Google Avi Lipkin, and you'll come directly to them. And the last one, of course, is really a fascinating discussion, which is, where does this civil war between Sunni and Shia Islam take us? And keep in mind that to isolate the Islamic State and say, you know, they're bad, they're the new Al-Qaeda. No, the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda are entirely, although they're both fundamental Muslim organizations, Islamic organizations, are very, very different. And there's been nothing in the history of Islam that's comparable to the Islamic State, maybe save the Ottoman Empire at its prime. And that is what we're building, and it's going to continue to spread. And the more that we attack it, the more that we bomb it, the faster it'll grow. I don't see it coming to an end anytime soon.
I think that's a good point. What I say in my most recent book is there is, as I see it, an alliance between Europe, United States, the Vatican, and Sunni Islam versus Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, and the Shiites. Guess who's going to win? Guess is going to lose.
Yeah, you know what's interesting though here is that China is the world's dominant superpower now economically, and that the Russians are a superpower from the point of view of gas and rare earth elements. They are in an extraordinarily strong position. They have no national debt, and they sit on enormous stockpiles of mineral wealth. And both are developing very capable weapon systems to rival those of the United States. But the reason that China and Russia are in support of Iran has nothing to do with Shia Islam.
Correct.
It has all to do with the oil and gas in the Caspian Sea and these tens of billions of dollars they've invested in the pipelines to take gas from the Caspian Sea through to their countries. So they have to play nice with the Iranians because of that. And so that's why they're on that side. But economically, Europe and the United States will be outmatched by China and Russia. We're not going to win that battle. And while America is the premier manufacturer of weapon systems in the world, most of our weapon systems are poorly designed for this particular fight. They are counterproductive. The more expensive weapons we use, the more bankrupt we become, and the faster the enemy grows. So I see Sunni Islam absolutely prevailing over Shia Islam, but I don't see the United States and Europe prevailing over Russia and China. How would you view that? Yeah, please.
Okay, now listen, I am not an expert on weaponry. You know, I don't know anything about weaponry, but, you know, in my travels around the United States, I've met many people who claim that they are, and there was one woman who I won't identify, but she told me that her father, who is now retired, told her that America has such horrible weaponry ready to go.
We do.
And it's going to be a pity that millions of people are going to die as these armies fight each other with sticks and stones. And then these weaponries will be brought in, weaponries that America and Europe has, that are going to be so destructive that it's going to be the end of China and Russia. So I'm not saying I disagree with you. I'm just saying this is another thing I heard. But what I am saying is that Russia, China, North Korea are using the Shiites as useful idiots, as proxies in a war against the Sunnis and against the West. Whereas the U.S., Europe, and the Vatican have this one world government working with the Sunnis against the Shiites. Everybody's using everybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Sunnis are using the West, Saudis are using the West as their mercenaries, and the Iranians are going to use the Chinese and the Russians as their mercenaries, and this is the makings for the perfect storm of World War III.
Yeah, they're clearly going to be a World War III, and Yahweh describes World War III as an all-Islamic assault on Israel. And by that time, based on everything that I read, the United States will be a non-factor. Yes, we are the merchants of death in the world, but we have so bankrupt ourselves, and our weapon systems are so expensive, and the entitlements that we have passed are so egregiously costly that I don't see the United States as being a significant factor 10 years from now. We have bankrupted ourselves. We've taken ourselves out of the game. And we've done so many things to isolate America and destroy its credibility. Avi, it's been a pleasure talking with you. I appreciate your knowledge and insights. Take care of yourself in Israel.
God bless you, and God save America, and God save Israel.